simple response. So again, beautiful to see everyone here this morning to be able. To find a new dimension to uplift and inspire and to really get together to learn.
Have to
I want to begin by introducing my tenor, the Dean of Reef, Jared Schwerg, and thank him in advance and for the last few weeks. A real partner with our community, the tenor himself and his university, and for planning this event together, really appreciated so much his presence here and his planning and partnership for the tenor.
Thank you very much, Rabbi Galler, Birshus, Rabbi Willig, and Rav Leibowitz, all the Rabban of this shul, so many of our alumni, rabbinic alumni, and so many friends. It's wonderful to see such a large crowd. It's not kosher to get a large crowd on a Sunday morning live anymore. No, it really isn't. It really isn't. And it's a tribute, of course, to Kelmer Zatzal. And it's also a tribute to our speaker this morning and to Rabbi Galler and his team. We are in the Parshios of Geula. We generally think of Sfiras HaOmer as the time leading up to Kabbalah HaTorah, but we also follow the Parshios. And it makes a lot of sense. We're sort of in a midwinter lull as we read about the slavery, as we read about the Shibud, which was also a spiritual Shibud. But we're leading up in a couple of weeks, once again, to be Makabal the Torah together. And to come in sort of the dead of the winter, and this really is the dead of the winter, to come to hear Torah is a very, very appropriate thing at this time. I just want to begin just with four very quick, not the very Torah, four very quick invitations. Whenever I speak in the community, I always like to invite everyone to come to yeshiva as well. Find an opportunity to come to yeshiva. For those of you who have not been back in yeshiva recently, it is hopping. Both the women's campus, the Barron campus, as well as the Wolf campus. This fall, we welcomed the biggest class that we've had in decades. And you could feel it. The campus is simply hopping. And if any of you still haven't, for some reason, been back and seen the Gluck Beis Medrash and understand the power of what goes on in that room, I encourage you to do so. Generally. Those of you who have sons in YU or high schoolers, on February, I think it is 19th, a Monday, President's Weekend, we're sort of having an open yeshiva today, especially after so many years of closed since the security and COVID, to come learn with your sons, regular day in yeshiva, that's Monday of President's Weekend, or if you're the father of a high schooler, you'll see information as well at any high school. I also want to encourage, it's this year a men's event, I apologize, but we invited basically the entire yeshiva to come and have Shir Yomi in the Sheraton Meadowlands, which is very far from Long Island, I know, in Cha Anokhi Yitzara. But there's going to be an amazing, amazing day on March 12th. As a chef that calls it now, we'll be calling it the Yom HaKahal, for the entire YU community, alumni, friends of the yeshiva. Talmidim will be having Shir Yomi in the Sheraton Meadowlands, followed by an unbelievable program with a Shir Klali by Rav Schechter, a 35-minute Shir from Rabbi Soloveitchik, who won't be there in person. But you've seen some of these 3-minute videos with the subtitles on the bottom. A 35-minute Shir from the Rav. An unbelievable day. We're hoping to have 600 or 700 people learning there together to imitate what goes on in yeshiva for one day in the Sheraton Meadowlands. So that's Monday of President's Weekend. For those who want to come learn with their sons, it is March 12th to recreate the yeshiva in all of its power in the Sheraton Meadowlands. And finally, I want to point out that even though not every single Sunday we're here as a yeshiva, but I just want everyone to remind themselves that we're always here as a yeshiva, because YU isn't just a couple of speakers that come, very, very hush of the speakers that come. But the yeshiva is all the rabbinic alumni who live here, all the alumni that live here, and the yeshiva is here because all of your Klei Kodesh are alumni of the yeshiva. And that's really how YU is in West Hempstead. Well, not in West Hempstead, because once in a while we bring out a speaker, and we do hope to continue to do that. I really want to thank Rabbi Gala for pushing us to make sure to be here today. I know that the Rosh Hashiva are traveling now back and forth. It's mid-semester time, but to be able to get us here today. But I just want to thank you for being a host to our rabbis, to being the recipients of our rabbi's Torah, and we hope that this relationship continues to strengthen over. It's my great pleasure. You're going to introduce our first? Okay. Thank you, Rabbi Gala.
Thank you, Rabbi Tanner. I was actually very pushy, not just puss. I was very pushy. I appreciate your understanding. Thank you very much. The Gemara has a machlokes. What constitutes a chazaka? Doing something twice or thrice? Three times. Now, of course, we all know the halacha. We usually assume it's three times. However, there is the opinion of two. Rare is it that a person is in our community as a guest speaker more than about once a year. Our first speaker this morning has been here twice in the last 6 or 7 months. It's not just because it worked out to our best interest. Every time I call Rabbi Leibowitz and ask him about giving a shiur here, often you hear, I'll check my schedule. He responds with an enthusiastic, yes, when is it? I'll check 100%. No questions asked. His enthusiasm for teaching Torah, his infectious smile when he teaches Torah, is truly, to me, as I know how little I sleep, I can only imagine his sleep schedule as well. It is truly inspiring and really so appreciated that he's always a partner in our community, willing to come to teach us. So many of us are his talmidim and talmidos, whether it's on Zoom, through Daf Yomi, through Shiurim, in the car, and he really has an impact, a daily, weekly, monthly, yearly impact on our shul and community. Without further ado, a great pleasure to have the Leibowitz here.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you so much, Rabbi Galler, and thank you all for coming to learn together this morning. Bereshus Marenu Hagon Rav Willig Shlita. If I appear a little nervous, it's because I am. I didn't realize Rabbi Willig would be here when I spoke. Bereshus, my dear friend, Rabbi Galler, who I admire so much. It's always a pleasure to be with you. Bereshus, Rabbi Penner, Rabbi Abramowitz, Rabbi Finkelstein, if I missed any rabbis, all the Chashma Rabbanim that are... A lot of rabbis, but yeah, in West Hempstead there are a lot of Vayu Musmachim, I know. There are a lot of Rabbi Schreier. Okay, if I keep looking, I'll keep finding more rabbis. So Bereshus, all the very Chashma Rabbanim that are here. The chosen topic for this morning is the topic of Mesorah. Now, Mesorah itself is a very, very broad topic, and I wasn't sure which element to choose to speak about. In fact, this morning I had a decision to make. Because right after my shir, I mean, everyone is here, obviously, for Moreno Rav Willig Shlita, and you're willing to suffer through me to get to him, but I give shir in yeshiva on Sunday morning. Smicha doesn't have a winter vacation, officially at least. Smicha doesn't have a winter vacation, so at 11:15 a.m. this morning, I'm supposed to be giving shir in yeshiva, and I thought it's going to be such a chutzpah if I leave as Rabbi Willig is about to start his shir. So I'm not sure what to do. I have... 45 Talmidim, winter vacation, 30 Talmidim, that are going to be willing to come to Shir today. And I have my own Rebbe saying Shir. And then I recalled that I remember once that when I was a Bachar in the yeshiva, Rabbi Baruch Pesach Mendelssohn came into the Beis Medrash and he said, I just heard the best drasha at the Chag HaSmicha. I didn't attend the Chag HaSmicha. I was still a Bachar in the yeshiva. He said, Ari Berman, at that time they called him Ari Berman, now the president of the yeshiva, just gave an amazing drasha at the Chag HaSmicha. I said, what was the drasha? He said, he spoke about that the only way you can ever pay your Rebbeim back for all of the good that they've done for you, for all of the Torah that they taught you, there's no paying it back. The only way to pay it back is to pay it forward. is to teach your own Talmidim. And I thought to myself, how can I show Hakaras HaTov to Morenu Rav Willich Shlita? More than by staying for his shir, is to be able to teach all the Torah I learned from him, especially we're learning a topic that I was zochet to learn from Rav Willich in shir. So all the Torah I learned from him, to be able to share it with my Talmidim. And the theme of this morning is Mesorah. So like, you know, like it fits the theme. So I apologize in advance that I'm going to have to leave before Rav Willig's shir, but certainly everyone here is in for a treat of being able to appreciate Morenu Rav Willig's Torah. So I wasn't sure exactly what to focus on, and then I was in Eretz Yisrael last week, and I was on the plane back, and I was preparing the daf for Shabbos for yesterday, and I realized that yesterday's daf has a beautiful section about Mesoras HaTorah, about the giving over of the Torah from one generation to another. So I thought, you know, when you do Daf Yomi, I have a 40-minute clock. You know, I have davening starts. They're going to start saying brachos whether I'm finished or not, you know, at the 40-minute mark. So I figured to take a step back, take a section of the Gemara that appears in yesterday's daf, and maybe go through it a little more slowly and see what messages that Gemara has to teach us about the Mesoras HaTorah, about how Torah is transmitted from one generation to the next. And at first glance, the Gemara seems to be telling us actually six different things about the Mesoras HaTorah. And I think what we're going to find is, even though you could analyze each of the six things that the Gemara tells us as being independent messages, then when we take a step back, it's really one very uncomplicated, very simple and direct message that the Gemara is teaching us through these six things the Gemara teaches about Mesoras HaTorah. Here are the six items the Gemara tells us. The Gemara wants to know who are the most likely candidates to become Talmidei Chachamim. If you were to identify, you know, this is part of my job, actually. You have to try to identify who are the most likely candidates to be the Rabbanim of the future, to be the Mechanchim of the future, to be the Marbitzei Torah of the future. And then, as Rabbi Penner and I work for Rabbi Penner, and we work together to try to identify those people and make sure they do what they're supposed to do, make sure that they actually dedicate their lives to teaching Torah. So if we had to identify who are the people that are most likely to succeed in that area as Talmidei Chachamim, and Talmidei Chachamim is not only reserved for people who dedicate their lives to Chinuch and Rabbanus, a person could be a Talmid Chacham no matter what his profession is, the Gemara tells us that, two broad statements, and then the second statement is broken down into five pieces. First statement the Gemara says is, Hizaharu mi b'nei aniyim, that it's very likely that people who grew up in poverty are going to be Talmidei Chachamim. Be careful with the honor of the Bnei Aniyim. Be careful to respect children of poor people, because they are the most likely to be Talmidei Chachamim. And then the Gemara says, and you know who's least likely to be Talmidei Chachamim? You know what we often don't find? We don't find that the Bnei Talmidei Chachamim are Talmidei Chachamim. We don't find that children of Talmidei Chachamim become Talmidei Chachamim. And the Gemara gives five reasons why it is that children of Talmidei Chachamim themselves don't become Talmidei Chachamim. And the whole Gemara is somewhat troubling. First of all, is that really true? That children, in your life experience, is that true? Children of Talmidei Chachamim don't become Talmidei Chachamim? Think of Gedolei Yisrael that we've had in recent times. Right, Rav David Feinstein passed away not so long ago. I think his father was a pretty big Talmud Chacham, from what I recall. Rav Chaim Kanievsky, Zichron Levracha, passed away not so long ago. His father was also a pretty big Talmud Chacham. We were just by, on this trip that I was in Eretz Yisrael last week, we were by Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein. So someone asked, one of the Rabbanim that was with us, asked Rav Yitzchak Zilberstein, whether there's anyone that you could say a bracha of Shalchalak Mechachmasu Lireyavan. And he said that Rav Eliyashiv told him years ago that there were three people that you were able to say this bracha on B'Shemu Malchus. There was Rav Aaron Cutler, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and the Stipler. So in this generation, the youth of this generation think, oh, the Stipler, that was Reb Chaim's father, right? Reb Chaim was the Stipler's son. Meaning, we see this all the time, that there are great gedolim that emerge from Talmid Chacham. In America, there was Shmuel Kamenetsky. His father was a pretty big Talmid Chacham also. We have all the time. In our own yeshiva, we see it all the time as well. Rabbi Willick's children are teaching Torah all over the world. We see it all the time. So is that really a fair statement to say that the children of Talmid Chacham are not going to be be Talmidei Chacham? And also, why would that be true? You know, every other characteristic that we have somehow seems to get passed on through the genes, right? If you have tall people, they tend to have tall children. You have smart people, they tend to have smart children. You have good-looking people, they have good-looking... Well, why is it that Talmidei Chacham, that's not gonna get passed on? Why would that even be true? And what is the message of this? There is an assumption, by the way, made in the entire sugya. And the assumption of the sugya is that it's important for us to know what to beware of, because the greatest dream and goal that we all have for our children is that they should be Talmidei Chachamim. Right? That's the unstated assumption, that of all the things we want for our children, we want them to have parnasa, we want them to have health, and we want them to have success in all areas, social success and emotional success. We want them to have everything. But a great, great goal, and probably the greatest goal that we have for our children, is that they should actually become Talmidei Chacham. So I'm just putting that out there, that is an assumption of the Gemara. So let's start with the first part of the Gemara that tells us to be careful with Bnei Aniyim, and then we'll move on to the section about children who are Talmidei Chachamim. So on the most basic level, the idea that the Bnei Aniyim, that the children of the poverty-stricken, are those who are likely to become Talmidei Chachamim, teaches us that every Jewish child deserves an education. That you never know where it's going to come from. And that if education is reserved for the rich, we are shooting ourselves in the foot. We are cutting off a major supply line of potential leaders in Klal Yisrael. As I mentioned just this past week, I was in Eretz Yisrael. We met with several people. Two of the great people that we met with pointed out that when we were discussing American Jewry, Israeli Jewry, and what the differences are and what we can learn from each other, two of the people that we met with said that it bothers them to no end how much it costs to have a child in yeshiva in America. Rabbi Yisrael Meir Lau made this point because we were asking him about whether he's worried about all the problems in Israel. And he said, problems in Israel? We don't have problems in Israel. You have problems in America. And he identified two things. And one thing he identified is the cost of education in America. The other thing he identified is, just Derech Agav, the other thing he identified is, he said, you know, in the 1940s, there were 6 million Jews in America. Millions of others have moved to America over the years. Natural population growth would dictate that we'd have over 20 million Jews in America today. We have about 5 million Jews in America today. He said, we're hemorrhaging, and you guys are asleep at the wheel. He gave a strong mussar that we have a 70% intermarriage rate, that we're asleep at the wheel. But the other point was that everyone has to have a chance at a Jewish education, B'nai Aniyim. That's the most basic level. But on a practical level, we can understand why Bnei Aniyim are primed to become Talmidei Chacham. The Ran writes that they're most likely to become Talmidei Chacham because they have no other business. There's no family business for them to go into. So Mela, what else are they going to do? So they're going to become Talmidei Chacham. They'll have much more time to learn because there's nothing else. They have fewer opportunities for economic progress and for financial success. So instead, they'll sit and learn. That's what the Ran says very practically, which, by the way, is not always the case. The Gemara famously tells us in Maseches Yuma that sometimes poverty takes a person away from Torah, and sometimes being wealthy takes a person away from Torah. The Gemara in Yuma, Daf Lamed Hey, tells us, Ba'aniyu ba'ashir v'rasha, ba'in l'din, if you have an ani, an ashir, that all come to din up in Shemayim, la'ani omimro, they'll tell an ani, mipnei malo asakta b'torah, why didn't you learn Torah? Imomar ani ayisi, v'torah b'mzono. If he says, well, I was poor and I was busy trying to make a living, they're going to say, well, were you more poverty stricken than Hillel was? And we know the story of Hillel, who's mistaker, betrepik, b'chol yom. He made a little bit of money each day, and half of it he used to get it, to pay the entrance fee to get into the Beis Medrash, and the other half just to try to support his family. And then one day he couldn't afford the entrance fee, and he ended up on the window. You know the story with the snow on top of him, right? So we all know the story. And then the Gemara says, an Ashir is going to be Baladin, and they're going to ask him as well, Mipnei Malo Asakta B'Torah, and Im Omer Ashir Ayisi, V'Torah Ayisi B'Nichsai, that I had so much to look after, I had all these real estate holdings, and I owned all of these different businesses, that because real Ashir doesn't own just one business, right? He's got his hand in like a million different things. I had so much to pay attention to. Omlo Klum Ashir Ayisi Yosim Reb Lazar, were you greater Ashir than Reb Lazar? Amra Alav Al Reb Lazar Ben Charsum Sheiniach Lo Aviv Elef Ayar Paros Piabasha Ukenegdon Elef Svinos Payam. He owned 1,000 cities and 1,000 boats, and Bechol Yom Yom he took note Shalkema Chak Sefo, and he went Meir Leir to learn Torah, Medina Le Medina to learn Torah. He dedicated his life to learning Torah, even though he had so much to think about, so much to worry about. So yeah, that could go either way, meaning from the Ran's perspective, the practical perspective, that an Ani is more likely to learn Torah because he has less to do. Not always the case. An Ani very often has a lot of lachatz, he has a lot of pressure, and because of that pressure, he may be less likely to learn Torah. The Ashir also might be less likely to learn Torah, so that could cut in both directions. But the Ben Yehoyada explains, also from a practical perspective, that if Ashirim become Tamid Chachamim, then they have no motivation to go and share the Torah with others. Whereas Aniyim will need whatever money they can get. So if they're offered to come give a shir somewhere, they're going to go, because who knows, maybe there will be a, what do they call it? Honorarium, right. So the first time someone said, oh, there's an honorarium. I'm like, is that like, are you going to be Korea Mishtach? I didn't know what it meant. I had never heard the word. So they tell you that there's going to be, by the way, you get more people to go get shirim if you tell them that. But anyway, that's cynical. If a person needs the money and he's going to, you know, so he's going to go, he's going to take every opportunity. So if you want Torah to be spread throughout Klal Yisrael, so you're going to want people who are in need of being able to receive some sort of honorarium. But then on a more metaphysical level, the Maharal explains in Netzach Yisrael that the Gemara is teaching us that the Hashpah of HaKadosh Baruch Hu on the Jewish people is something that is ruchni, it's not gashmi. It's something that is more spiritual and it's not physical, it's sichli, it's ruchani, it's not gashmi. And therefore, the way the balance tends to work is that the more a person is connected to gashmius, the less receptive a person is to ruchnius. It's just the nature of things. It's just the way the world works. We had a chance last week to meet with a great Talmud Chacham by the name of Rav Rubin in Harnof. Rav Rubin is the rabbi of the shul where the terrible attack happened in Harnof, but he's also the author of a classical, now a modern classical work on Hilchos Shabbos called Orchos Shabbos, and he's an enormous Talmud Chacham. And one of the things he said to us, he wanted to schmooze a little bit before we peppered him with questions in Hilchos Shabbos. So he said, Shamati, he said, I heard that in Lakewood there's been a Yerida in the Ruchnius. We're like, we have no idea, we're not from Lakewood, we don't know. We said, but we do know there's been an Aliyah in the Gashmius. He says, yeah, Hainuha. There's been an Aliyah in the Gashmius. Then Mustafa, there's been a Yerida in the Ruchnius. That's the nature of things. So a person who's very unconnected to Gashmius is more likely to be receptive to a sense of ruchnius, and that's b'nei aniyim. But then the Gemara moves on to the primary topic, and that is, why is it that Talmidei Chacham don't have children who are Talmidei Chacham? And the Gemara gives 5 answers. I want to run through the first 4 quickly and get to the 5th one, and then wrap it up with one message, one theme that runs through everything in this sugya. The Gemara says that, the Gemara asks, "Mipnei ma'ein mitzuyin Talmidei Chachamim, lotzeis Talmidei Chachamim b'neihem." First answer, again, there are 5 answers. First answer, Amar of Yosef Shalom Yomru Torah Yerusha Hilahem, that they shouldn't say that the Torah is Yerusha. Meaning if every time Talmud Chacham had a child, that child became a Talmud Chacham, then he had a child, and that child became a Talmud Chacham, everyone will say, oh, they're rabbinic families, and that's where Torah belongs, and Torah doesn't belong in non-rabbinic families. Who's Yomru? It's actually Machlokas Achronim. Some of the Achronim say Shalom Yomru, that the Talmud Chacham themselves shouldn't say it, that they shouldn't think, they shouldn't have a sense of entitlement. Oh, because my father was so-and-so, so I'm going to get a job in the yeshiva because my father was a big Talmud Chacham. Don't have any sense of entitlement. Others say that no, it's not about the Talmud Chacham themselves, it's that it shouldn't, the rest of Klal Yisrael shouldn't feel dejected, as if they have no chance. Because I don't come from a rabbinic family, how am I going to be a great Talmud Chacham if I don't come from Talmud Chachamim? So, and both are true. Shalom Yomru. Everybody shouldn't say. One of Rav Palm's grandchildren told me that after his grandfather passed away, he said his father, one of Rav Palm's sons, gathered all of his children around and he said, and he gave them this musar. He said, your grandfather was one of the Gedolei Adar. Your grandfather was Rav Palm. Guess what? That means nothing as far as your own accomplishment. You are achray for yourselves. You need to accomplish yourselves. You need to learn yourselves. You need to go and become Talmidei Chachamim and not try to milk whatever relationship that you may have. Now, the question on the simple level really means, why is it that the children of Talmid Chacham don't become Talmid Chacham? It happens to be, one of the Achronim, the Sefer Nachlus Baruch, points out that if you read the Gemara carefully, it may not be asking why it is that Talmid Chacham don't have children of Talmid Chacham. The Gemara says, Mipnei Ma'in Mitzuyin, Talmid Chacham, listen carefully to the words, Talmid Chachamim, Lotzeis Talmid Chachamim, Mi B'neihen. What does that mean? Their grandchildren, right? Why is it that Talmidei Chacham don't have Talmidei Chachamim emerge from their own children? Which implies that it's about the grandchildren. And this probably relates to what the Gemara in Ksubas of Samach Beis tells us. Hachuta Meshulash Lo B'Meheri Yenotek. I mean, that's a pasuk, but the Gemara darshans the pasuk in Koheles, that once you have three generations of Torah within a family, so then it becomes very, very sturdy. Just like if you have a rope that's a three-pronged rope that has twine that's put together in three. I don't know how to say it, but you know what I'm talking about, right? So it doesn't cut easily. It doesn't snap easily. So once you have three generations, it's not easily going to break. The Gemara in Ksubas tells a story of a particular Amora that Rabbi Hanani ben Chachinon went actually the Gemara goes on and tells about someone else. The Gemara tells about one of the great Amorayim that he went to go learn Torah far away. This Gemara has a whole series of stories of Talmid Chacham who left home for like years to go learn elsewhere. So one of the stories was someone went for many years to go learn elsewhere, and he came back and he was a big Talmid Chacham, but he wasn't sure, he didn't want to go into his house right away and shock his wife or anything like that, so he wanted to go to the Beis Medrash first and see what's going on there. And he went to the Beis Medrash and he saw this young man, this young boy that was learning Torah exceptionally well. And then he had a little Chalisha Sadas, and he said, if only I would have been around to raise my son. You know, I was off in yeshiva somewhere. If only I would have been around to raise my son, maybe my son could have turned out this way. And then when he went back to his house, he saw this boy go into the house before him. And he realized that that was his son. And that his son actually grew to become a Talmid Chacham. And the Gemara says, you see from there, Hachuta Meshulash, Lo B'Meheri Yenatek. That when you have three generations of Talmid Chachamim, it doesn't easily get severed. And the Marsha says, what do you mean three generations? That's two. That's the father and the son. Where do you see Al-Chut HaMashulash? And the Marsha says, well, when the father was away, who taught the kid Torah? The grandfather. Obviously, right? There must have been a grandfather who was a Talmid Chacham. You have an obligation to teach your grandchildren Torah as well. So it must have been that they had three generations of Talmid Chachamim. So that's what the Nachlas Baruch suggests, that when the Gemara says about why it is that our children don't become Talmid Chachamim, that Talmid Chacham's children don't become Talmid Chachamim, means grandchildren. And the answer the Gemara gives is that people shouldn't think it's a Yerusha, because once you have three generations, then it's going to become something that's much more set in stone and unlikely to be severed. Second answer the Gemara gives. So again, the first answer is people shouldn't think it's a Yerusha. Second answer, says the Gemara, Rav Sheshes Breid Rav Idi Omer, Kedei Shelo Yisgadru Ala Tzibur, to prevent them from acting with arrogance and haughtiness over the Tzibur. Meaning, if you find that Talmidei Chachamim have children that are all perfect, and all their children are always well behaved and become great Talmidei Chachamim, and then they're gonna look down at other people. How is a Rav gonna react when someone comes over to them and they say that they're having struggles with their child? They're gonna say, "Well, I don't have struggles with my child because all of my children are perfect." And if that were to happen, they're not gonna be able to relate to anyone, and they're gonna feel a sense of arrogance and haughtiness over the tzibur. Everyone should realize we're all vulnerable. We all have struggles. We all have tsar gidul banim. We all have the same struggles, regardless of how much Torah a person learns in his own life, regardless of what he's accomplished in his own life. Then a third approach, says the Gemara, Mazutra Omer, Mipnei Shehin Mizgabrin Ala Tzibur. It's not to prevent potential arrogance and haughtiness. It's punishment for the arrogance and haughtiness that's already there. That if a Talmud Chacham acts with arrogance, if he acts with gaiva, if he acts with haughtiness, so as a punishment, his children won't become Talmud Chachamim. Shita Mukbetzes explains that this approach rejects the previous approach of Rav Sheshes, because how could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu takes a collateral before you actually do the Avera? I mean, how could it be that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to say, your children aren't going to become Talmid Chacham before you even acted with arrogance, just as a preventative measure? What do you want from the person? Okay, then a fourth approach. Rav Ashi Omer Mishum Dekaru Le'inshi Chamri, that they call people who are not as educated as them donkeys. I don't know, but apparently Talmid Chachamim call people who are not, if they have children who are Talmid Chachamim, then they're going to call people who are not as educated as them donkeys. So in general, whenever you learn Gemara like this, you have to understand that there are many, many layers of meaning. Sometimes when we learn some of the Agadat of Gemara, because I give a Daf Yomi shir, so Daf Yomi is quick, so you don't have time to necessarily go through all of the layers of meaning. And you get to the Agadat of Gemara, and people say, what is this? This is like nonsense of the Gemara. Chas v'shal, you can't even say such a, but we don't understand. Like when the Gemara tells the story of a king and a horse, and the king is not a king, the horse is not a horse, the daughter is not a daughter, meaning everything has many, many layers of meaning. So what does it mean, a donkey, that they call people donkeys? So the Marsha explains that they treat Ame Aretz as if they don't have the capacity to learn. Like a donkey doesn't have the capacity to acquire chachma. And mida keneged mida, you think this is something that's about your the genetics you're born with? What kind of genetics do you pass on to your own children? You'll see they won't become talmidei chacham, and you'll realize that it's not about genetics, that it's not about that. Karnor explains that no, a chamor is that which carries your stuff for you. You pile all your packages on a chamor. So the Talmud Chacham says, I need to sit and learn. The Ram talks about this in the Pirush HaMishnayos, about the terrible habit that some talmidei chacham have. They say, well, since I have to sit and learn, everything, all of my responsibilities should be pushed on Amei Aretz. Let them feed me, let them work, let them take care of me, let them do everything for me. There should be no sense of entitlement when a person is Talmud Chacham. But then the fifth answer, which is the most famous answer, and the one that I really want to focus on today, and perhaps suggest an idea that was new to me yesterday when I thought about it. The final answer the Gemara has, Ravina Omer, She'ein Mevarchen B'Torah Tchila, that they don't recite Birchas HaTorah first. And it leads the Gemara into, I don't know, I would imagine the most famous Gemara in Maseches Nedarim, where the Gemara interprets the Pasuk in Yirmiyahu, Mia ish ha-chacham v'yavin ha-zos v'asher diber pe Hashem elav v'yagida al ma'avda aretz, why did we lose Eretz Yisrael? And the Gemara interprets it to mean that the pasuk to mean that neither the chachamim nor the neviim could explain why we lost the Beis Hamikdash until HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself came along and said Shein Mevarchim B'Torah Tchila, that we lost the Beis Hamikdash because of failure to be Mevarch Berachas HaTorah, and it's that very same thing that leads our children, the children of Talmidei Chachamim, not to be Talmidei Chachamim. Shein Mevarchim B'Torah Tchila, and of course this demands explanation. What do you mean, Shein Mevarchim B'Torah Tchila? What, they do every other mitzvah, and Birchas HaTorah is the one that they have trouble with? Birchas HaTorah is very easy. You could do Birchas HaTorah, my shul is two doors down from my house. I say Birchas HaTorah on the walk from my house to my shul every morning. Very easy to do. You could say it as you're walking, it's easy to memorize. It's not that hard. It's not that hard. Shein Mevarchim B'Torah Tchila, they didn't say Birchas HaTorah? That was the problem. Now, Chavrusa Rabbi Razner has a list of the top 10 most famous rounds in Maseches Nedarim. I have a list of the top 1 most famous round in Maseches Nedarim, and the top 1 most famous round in Maseches Nedarim. I used to have a major Talmud Chacham lived around the corner from me. He passed away already, Rabbi Maurice Lamb. And he used to daven in my shul. So I asked him once to critique my drushes. I said, tell me what I did wrong. Long story short, I did everything wrong. But one of the things that I did wrong, he said, you called something famous. You called the piece of Torah famous. He said, your job is to uplift people. When you call something famous, if there's someone there that never heard of it before, you made them feel like 2 cents. You made them feel lousy about themselves. Why would you throw in that word famous? Say, this is a round we should all strive to know. Don't say it's a famous round, because then someone who doesn't know it feels badly about themselves. I don't care. This is a famous Ron, okay? You got to know this Ron. This Ron quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah. Ron quotes from Rabbeinu Yonah, and he says the following. That the Torah was not chashuva be'einehem to say a bracha. The Torah wasn't chashuv enough. It's not that they didn't actually say a bracha. It's that they didn't think the Torah warrants a special bracha. And more than actual learning of Torah, kavod ha-Torah is the greatest predictor of your children becoming talmidei chachamim. Rav Eliashiv has a comment in one of his svarim, one of the Ha'aros svarim that they wrote up from his shiurim, that at a siyum masechta we list off all the children of Rav Papa. Apparently, Rav Papa had a lot of children of talmidei chachamim. He had all these 10 sons that were all great talmidei chachamim. So Rav Eliashiv said, "Well, what did he do that he was zocha to have so many sons who were talmidei chachamim?" So you'll say, "Oh, because he was Rav Papa. He must have been. He was a great talmidei chachamim. But all the Amoraim were great talmidei chachamim themselves. Why was he zocha?" And Rav Eliashiv starts collecting different Gemaras, mostly Maseches Brachos, that all identify one characteristic of Rav Papa. And that was that when he had two Gedolei Amoraim that disagreed with each other, Rav Papa somehow managed to incorporate both opinions. to say neither one is wrong. They're both correct in different circumstances. He's the one that managed to be machriya to include both of them in his hachra la halacha. And what you see from there is an immense kavodat Torah. And when children grow up in a house where there's this sense of kavodat Torah, where people appreciate whether the parents are tamid chacham or not, but they respect Torah, they value Torah, they have kavodat Torah, they want to be mistabek b'tamid chachamim, they value people who learn, then the children are going to say, ooh, that's something to strive for. That's something that I want to do also. If Torah is such an honorable thing. And mipnei ma, why is it that the Talmid Chacham don't find that the children of Talmid Chacham, says the Gemara, because lo berachu b'Torah tchila, says Rabbeinu Yonah, quoted by the Ran, shlo berachu b'Torah tchila, because it wasn't chashuva be'eneihem. And then the Ran writes, elu divrei hachasid zal, vehim no'im uru'uyin lemisha amaram. These are the words of the chasid, Rabbeinu Yonah, and it's ra'uy for someone like Rabbeinu Yonah to say such a thing. What does he mean by that? So the Sefer Yadlos Nedarim explains that the Ran is explaining that they knew that they were learning Shalom Lishma. They knew that they weren't respecting the Torah properly. And they also knew that the Iker Birchas HaTorah was only for those who learn Lishma. So they had the integrity, not to recite a Birchas HaTorah, knowing the flaws in the type of Torah that they were learning, in their attitude toward Talmud Torah. So says the Sefer Yadlos Nedarim, that's what the Ran means. Ru'in hadvarim l'misha amaram. That even in criticizing Klal Yisrael, Rabbeinu Yonah said, try to find a silver lining of something to compliment Klal Yisrael. To say, yeah, they didn't have proper chashivas HaTorah. But they knew that they didn't have proper chashivas HaTorah. And that's why they had the integrity not to recite a bracha. Okay, that's the Ran named Rabbeinu Yonah. There are many other approaches. I want to share maybe one or two others and then share something that someone must say, but I didn't find it anywhere. The Mefarish writes that Talmid Chacham are often so eager to learn that they go straight to learning without first reciting the bracha, which deprives them of the opportunity to say, Niyah Anachnu V'tzatzeinu V'tzatzeinu Melom De Torah, that our children should be Melom De Torah. So if they're not going to say that bracha, then their children are not going to learn Torah. The Rambam in the Tshuva in Siman Kof Lamed Hey has a different approach. The Rambam writes that the problem was that they weren't makbid on their own kavodat Torah. What does it mean, shlo berachu b'Torah tchila? What does tchila mean? Is that when you get an aliyah, what's the order of aliyahs in the shul? So we do Kohen, then Levi, then Yisrael. But we know, the Mishnah at the end of Horiyos tells us, that afilu mamzer tamil chacham is kodim l'kohen gadol am haaretz. Tamil chacham should go first. And the tamil chacham should be makbid on the kavodat Torah. So the shlo berachu b'Torah tchila, that they didn't take the first aliyah, that they let other people take the first aliyah. I'm told in Rav Avadi Yosef's minyan in Harnof, they used to give him the first aliyah. He was not a Kohen or a Levi, but they gave him the first aliyah. No one was going to argue, right? I mean, it was Rav Avadi Yosef. I don't know if there's anyone today that no one would argue, but certainly among the Sfardim, no one was going to argue when Rav Avadi Yosef gets the first aliyah. That's how the Rambam insists. Shlo berachu b'Torah tchila, that they didn't have the proper insistence that people be mechabed the Torah. The Taz explains that they didn't engage in learning, b'derech masa umatan. I think this is such a chashuva nekuda, and it's something that if we had more time to be omed on, more time to focus on, I would. And that is that what the Taz in Archaim Sim Memzai in Hilchot Torah emphasizes, that people sometimes treat Torah as an enjoyable endeavor. It's something that they do, and they enjoy, and they sit back, and they listen, and it's nice. That's not really the model of how Torah is supposed to be learned. The model of Torah is it's supposed to be a malchamta shel Torah. Esvev besufa, you're supposed to have this arguing back and forth about the learning. It should be an animated discussion. It should be active learning. You know, I've often said, and I don't know if this is the popular thing to say, especially I'm a little nervous to say it with Rabbi Penner here, that one of the how do I say this? The great success of YU Torah, in a certain way, is an indication of somewhat of a failure in our community in the way we learn Torah. You ever try to listen to a shir from a more yeshivish place? It's hard to listen to, because they're yelling at him the whole time. They're fighting every smarter that's thrown out. Ah, what are you talking about? Good kashas, bad kashas, but there's a mochama going on. It's hard to listen to. Why Torah is very easy to listen to. Because you don't find that our community is very often good at listening to lectures. We're good listeners. Don't fight me now. I don't know what to answer. You can fight Rabbi Willick. I'll have answers to you. But that's, there's a certain asek in Torah that we're missing. And the bracha is lasok. The bracha is to be osek in Torah, to be active participants in Torah. So yeah, you listen to shiurim in Torah, but that's not our core learning. The way that we learn should be with a melchamta shel Torah, with a chavrusa. That's the way Torah was meant to be. And children are going to connect to an energy of Torah. Children aren't going to connect to the fact that you like to attend lectures. Children are going to connect to a Torah that's alive, that's energetic. And that's how you're going to find Talmidei Chacham that have children that are Talmidei Chacham. Rosh Shlomo Zalman Auerbach has, in Milcha Shlomo, has a different mahalich, and you see how each one is dealing with their own community and whatever issues they note. Rosh Shlomo Zalman says that, no, Shel Berachu B'Torah Tchila means that people were learning when they weren't supposed to be learning. Just like you're not allowed to learn before you say Birkas HaTorah, people were learning when they were supposed to be taking care of their children, and they were learning when they were supposed to be doing their other responsibilities. And they said, no, let the wife take care of the children. They were going and learning. But yeah, you have kids to take care of. Now, Kadosh Baruch Hu blessed you with children. That means you're supposed to take care of them also. So Shlomo Zalman says, that's Shlomo Berachu B'Torah Tchila. Okay, that's an interesting mahalich. I remember they had a question answer once with Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, together with his wife, Dr. Tova Lichtenstein. And they asked, they were asking about balancing family responsibilities and Talmud Torah. Talmud Torah and Avodas Hashem. And Dr. Tova Lichtenstein said, sometimes my husband would go to a later minyan because he was busy taking care of the children in the morning. And Rav Aaron stopped and corrected her. He said, sometimes I missed minyan entirely. She didn't want to embarrass him, so she didn't say it. She just said, he went to a later minyan. And he said, no, let's call a spade, let's say what it is. Sometimes, not, I imagine not often, but sometimes when things were really going crazy in the house, he said, sometimes I missed minyan because I had to take care of the children. And that was my achrayus. That's what Shlomo Zalman is pointing to. But I had a thought of a different interpretation. In Shlo Berchu B'Torah Tchila, you could take it or leave it. It's either wrong or somebody else says it, and I just don't know. Berchu HaTorah is unusual. It's an unusual Berchu HaMitzvah in that we do not recite Berchu HaTorah every time we learn. Right? Meaning, let's say you woke up at 6 a.m. and you daven and you go about your day, and then later you attend the Daf Yomi Shir in the afternoon, let's say Shabbos afternoon or something. Right? So you don't say a new Berchu HaTorah right before the Daf Yomi Shir. You said a Birkas HaTorah in the morning already. We don't say a new Birkas HaTorah. Why is that? So Tosfos Maseches Brachos Daf Yud Aleph asks why it is that a person does not need to say a Birkas HaTorah when they stop their learning and then go back to learning. And Tosfos gives the answer that a person never gives up thinking about going back to learning. Because a person should learn whenever he has free time. And he's always, whatever a person's doing throughout the day, there's always some pull back to the learning. The Agur has a little bit of a different Nusach where he says that no, it's that if a person knows how to look at the world with Torah glasses on, then everything he sees is going to be Torah. Meaning every business situation that comes up is going to be, wait, is this a Shaila? Am I allowed to do this? Am I not allowed to do that? Everything, he knows how to look at the world through the lens of Torah. So he's actually never leaving Torah. Because Torah is his whole life. And even when he's not learning, there's Torah that's fused through everything that he does. That's how Tosos suggests that you're always trying to get back to learning. The Agur suggests that there's Torah in everything that you do. That idea of being constantly connected to Torah, even as we do other things, is so critical to the experience of living life as a Jew. It came up in yesterday's Haftorah. According to Ashkenazim, there are three different versions of the Haftarah. It came up yesterday's Haftarah that we read, where the Navi Yeshayahu criticizes the northern kingdom of Ephraim and why they were destroyed because they had hardiness and they got drunk. And the complaint is that they indulge in Olam Hazeh too much, and that led them astray. And the Navi says, Esmi Yoredeyah, Esmi Yavin Shmua. Who's even left to teach? We can't even teach anybody Torah because they're too busy with their, what do they call it? Charcuterie board? I don't even know how to pronounce it. You know, with their gashmius, they're too busy with their meat and their wine, and they're too busy. There's no one to teach. All you have is the children. Those are the only people that are left to teach. And then the Navi goes on to say a phrase twice in the span of like five psukim. The Navi says, Ki tzav l'tzav, tzav l'tzav, kav l'kav, kav l'kav, zi'ir sham, zi'ir sham. What does that mean? Tzav l'tzav means, yeah, I do a mitzvah here, I do a mitzvah there. Kav l'kav, kav means a lo sasei, I do a lo sasei there, a lo sasei there. Zi'ir sham, a little bit here, a little bit there. It means that a person's religious observance is not an overall way of existing and way of living. That a religious observance that a person has is, yeah, I do my mitzvah of the day here, and then a few hours later I'll do another mitzvah of the day. You know, but it's not something that permeates their entire existence. And the Navi's criticizing Klal Yisrael for that. I mean, you have people, Baruch Hashem, such a beautiful crowd of people coming to attend a shir in the morning. There could be two models of attending a shir. Right? One model is, I need to do my mitzvah of the day, so I'm going to attend a shir. The other model is, of course I'm going to attend a shir, because that fits seamlessly into everything else I do in my life. Everything else I do in my life suggests that I'm always looking for opportunities for growth and ruchnias. And it fits seamlessly into whatever I do in my life. That it's natural. It's like a mashal where I speak to chassanim sometimes. Right? I'll tell them, you buy your wife a birthday present. So there are two ways you can view that. One is, well, it's her birthday, so I have to buy her something. So even though, you know, there's nothing I ever do for her other than her birthday, but on the birthday, the rules say, birthday, you got to buy something. Or it could be, it's a natural expression of our relationship that exists all the time. I'm always looking at what I could do for her. I'm always looking for how I can make her happy and what I can do to help her and what I can do to be mechazik her and what I can do to show her love. And it happens to be on the birthday when I buy a nice birthday present. That fits perfectly into exactly what I'm always trying to do. So our relationship with the Ribbono Shalom is similar. That a person could take a relationship with the Ribbono Shalom and say, okay, there are obligations. You know, Wes Hempstead finally has a Kol Yom Rishon. I've been fighting for this for a long time. I got to come. Kol Yom Rishon. Or, I'm always striving for Ruchnius. I'm always trying to connect to the Ribbono Shalom. So of course I'm going to be the one that comes. I'm going to be one of the people that comes to attend the Shir. And that's what Tosas is talking about. Tosas is saying there's no new Birchas HaTorah in the afternoon because it's part of this overall attitude of a relationship with the Ribbono Shalom. I thought maybe that's what it means, Shel Berachah B'Torah Tchila. That if a person has a relationship with Torah where he's not constantly connected, where it's tzav l'tzav, tzav l'tzav, ze'er sham, ze'er sham, a little bit here, a little bit there. Guess what? The halacha is you're chayiv to say a new Birchas HaTorah. The only heter not to say a new Birchas HaTorah is that you're connected all the time. Shel Berachah B'Torah Tchila. You're only faulted for not saying a new Birchas HaTorah. It's not talking about the Birchas HaTorah in the morning. Everyone does that. It's talking about the Birchas HaTorah in the afternoon. You're only faulted for not saying the Birchas HaTorah in the afternoon if you don't have that constant connection to Torah. And that's why Talmidei Chacham don't find that their children become Talmidei Chachamim, because they don't have that constant connection. That constant connection to Torah. And if a person doesn't make it part of the way that they live Torah, then it's not going to be sustainable for the next generation. But I just want to take in the last 2 minutes a step back and realize what just happened in this Gemara. The Gemara started by saying, be careful with Bnei Aniyim, because that's where the Talmidei Chacham are going to come from. Then the Gemara gave five different reasons why children of Talmidei Chacham don't become Talmidei Chachamim. Karen Ora points out, all of this is one message. It's all a message of humility. It's all a message to avoid Gasos HaRuach. The Gemara in Tainis, Daf Zayin, tells us that Amar Rabbi Chanina, Baridi, Lama Nimshlu Divrei Torah L'mayim. Why is it that Torah is compared to Mayim? Dichsev, Havi Kol Tzame L'chul L'mayim, that if you're thirsty, you go to water. Lama L'cha, Ma Mayim Manichem Makom Gavoa V'holchem L'makom Namuch. You ever have a leak in your house, and you see like in the ceiling where it's leaking? So you want to find on the roof, the spot on the roof, where there's a hole. It's almost never right above the spot that it's leaking, right? Because the water finds the lowest spot, and that's where it comes through. So it could be leaking at the other end of the house, but the water is going to continue, and it's only going to come through at the lowest spot. That's the nature of water, that it goes to makom namuch. It goes to the lowest spot. Af divrei Torah in miskaymin al b'misha daito shvala. So too divrei Torah doesn't work with balei gaiva. Even the idea of shlo berchu b'torah tchila is an expression of gaiva. That they didn't realize that they're only milas through Torah. that ilav hayoma kama yosi ika bashuka, that without Torah there wouldn't be anything special. And that fits all of the explanations that the Gemara gave. Right? It fits the understanding that aniyim have children who become tamid chacham, because aniyim have nothing to be gaivadik about. People have pride and arrogance and haughtiness in their money. And that's why Shlomo Torah Yerusha Yilam, that's a sense of gaiva. And Kidei Shlo Yisgadra El Tzibor, that they shouldn't have gaiva over the Tzibor. And the punishment for having gaiva over the Tzibor and calling Amei Aretz Chamorim. All of it relates to gaiva. And this speaks to the power and the importance of midos among Talmidei Chachamim. This week, as everyone here knows, is the yard site of Rabbi Kelmer Zecher Tzadik Livracha. And if there was ever a person that represented the concept of midos being the foundation of a Talmud Chacham, the foundation of a Torah personality, it was those of us who were able to connect to Rabbi Kelmer and made it a part of ourselves by connecting to him. He was overflowing with midos tovos. Rabbi Kelmer would call me sometimes, and if I would do something wrong, something that he wanted me to address, he made it sound like he was asking me a shaila. Like, I'm like, why is Rabbi Kelmer asking me a shaila? Like, I had to realize, he's not asking me a shaila, he's telling me what to do. But it made it sound like he was asking me a shaila. The midos were just like overwhelming. And this morning, of course, is about Masora. And Baruch Hashem, you're all part of that Masora. And most notably, your Rav is part of that Masora. He's a Talmud Muvak, someone who absorbed the Midos of Rabbi Kelmer. Absorbed the Midos that represent what a Torah personality is supposed to look like. You should appreciate that. You should each think about all of your interactions with Rav Kelmer Zatzal and learn about those midos and interact with your wonderful Mara Da'asra, with Rabbi Galler, and appreciate all of his outstanding midos and be able to understand what a Torah personality looks like and how to appreciate how midos are the foundation for being able to build a family. Be'ez Hashem, we should all be zocha to build families of Torah. Chut HaMashul Shlo B'Meiri Yinatek for many, many generations.